called Life's Healing Choices. And this is the basis of all of our Sunday mornings and weekday evenings when we have a network group. If you're part of a network group, how many of you are part of a network group or came to the church on Wednesday to watch the video this week? Quite a few of you. Awesome. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I really enjoyed it. Our group really enjoyed it. So this week we're going on choice number two. But just before I get started with that, I had a little story that happened to me over the past couple of weeks, and I wanted to share it, and I think it actually in some ways fits in. Because this morning what God keeps bringing to me is, it's all about perspective. What perspective do we have? Moved to Vancouver almost 6 years ago, working in a Christian school, part of a beautiful Christian body here at West Coast. Not many opportunities for me to get to know people who don't know Jesus. Praise God for my son. He started playing soccer on a soccer team last year. And so every Monday I'm out at a soccer practice. Every Saturday I'm out at a soccer game. And I keep seeing the same people over and over and over again. Yeah, there was a different story where I was this close to getting what I thought was my closest non-Christian friend to come to church, and I found out he was a Christian. But that's not the story from this morning. The same families, I got to know them through the year. Now my son's part of a different little mini soccer league. Happens every Saturday, and again, practices on Monday. So on Saturdays and on Mondays with these practices, there's a bunch of different teams going around. And I get to connect with all these parents that I've seen throughout the year. And one of the parents was the manager of Elijah's soccer team this last winter. So I'm walking around, there's a track around all of these little, they have mini fields, mini soccer fields. I'm walking around, and I see this guy, and he's still managing a soccer team, but he's just kind of moving like this. He has a hard time lifting up his feet. So I walk up, and I say, "Hey, Gene, are you okay? Like, what's going on?" And he tells me, "Yeah, I ride my bike to work most days, and I did something to my back this week. It's really, really sore. I can hardly lift up my feet." I said to him, "Well, if it's okay, I'm going to pray for you tonight and see if it gets better." To which he goes, "Ah, yeah, prayer. When I was a kid, I lived in Montreal, and I went to the cathedral and lit candles and prayed for the Canadians. They won the Stanley Cup." "Maybe I should do the same for the Canucks," he said. So we're joking a little bit, but he brings it back around at the end, and he says to me, "I'll let you know if it works." So last Monday, I'm walking around the track again, and he sees me. He comes out of his way and goes, "Hey, Derek, I have to tell you, it worked. My back, just like a day and a half later, completely better." It's perspective. You know, like sometimes I'm afraid to do stuff like that because I think, oh, it's not going to work. Or here I thought, okay, he's got a different perspective. Yeah, he lit candles and prayed for the Canadian. But I came around and it actually worked. It was a revelation that Jesus is alive. So that was really cool. Last week, Charlie spoke on Matthew 5:3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." We talked about that as the reality choice. I want to quickly go through last week because maybe not everybody was here. Just quickly go through a couple of points from last week because that leads us right into choice number two this week. So with this reality choice, we have to come to a realization that we have a tendency to do wrong, to do the wrong thing. We always fall short. And shocking, I have a desire to be God. And I like to attempt to play God. It's true. I like to be in control. Just ask my students. It's true. We really try hard to control our image, to control other people, our problems, our pain. So last week Charlie really walked us through very well. It was during network group as well. We walked through that, and it was really powerful. We have to come to that realization and actually admit that these things are what they are, and we need God, and we need God's help. So much of the Beatitudes, the attitudes that we are to be, is about perspective. So Have any of you ever had an opportunity to look at one of those 3D pictures? Some of them really irritate me, because when you look at them, they look kind of like a bunch of colorful nothing, and I kind of I can't get. Sometimes I get the picture and go, oh, cool. That's kind of like the Beatitudes. It kind of sometimes we're going to go, does that make sense? As you wrestle through them, they'll come into focus. So I really do hope that you don't leave it just at the morning, but you really pray about things and you work things through. Get the book. It is helpful. It's got very good testimonies in there, and it really helps explain what we're going through. I have to say, I had another idea of perspective. Bethy walked out, but Bethy and Addison are getting married. They've got a really beautiful perspective on each other, and they love each other, and they see all the good things in each other. Now, if I look back at Arnold and Joanne, they've known each other a lot longer than Bethy and Addison, and I think they look at each other, and they love each other even more, and they are closer than, when I get married, I really thought, how could I ever love somebody more than this? How could I ever be closer? It happens. But through it all, I think if you ever get a chance to go talk to Arnold and Joanne, they probably would find out there were a few wrestles along the way. And when you really get to know somebody, when my wife got to know me more, she goes, he's like that? So, but all of those things, it helps with perspective. So there is some wrestling that goes through and to gain perspective. Another example. I don't know how many of us are going to watch the big game this afternoon. Yeah, excellent, okay. Now, the big game. Now, here's a perspective on the big game. Some truth that I came across over the last couple of days about the big game as I listened to my favorite radio station, the sports radio station. It was reported on Friday that probably the most significant player in the game is injured. This was tweeted. Now, those of you who don't know what a tweet is, it's all through the internet, and you have your wonderful little access to the internet, and you quickly put something on there. It's called a tweet. You get your little account, and you tweet something. But it was tweeted that another player saw this star hobbling across the locker room. And it is confirmed, definitely confirmed, that he will not be playing this afternoon. Would this change your perspective of the game you're going to watch? Yes or no? I hope it's a yes. Probably would change it more to the good or bad if I told you who the player was. Yes. But my guess is it would probably change it even more if I told you I'm not talking about the Canucks, I'm talking about the Players Golf Championship that is the final round this afternoon, and Tiger Woods is out because he's injured. It's perspective. It's perspective. Did I get you on that one? Blessed are those who mourn. Charlie went through last week a little bit of what God's appraisal is about. Blessed refers to being happy, fortunate, approved, congratulations, right on, the right side up. Now, when you put this in perspective of the second beatitude, you get to a wonderful paradox. Happy are those who are sad. Don't you love that? In order to be truly happy, you have to be sad. The Bible really does throw you some curveballs. But really, it doesn't make sense. When you look at the first choice Charlie brought to us last week, to admit I am powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and my life is unmanageable. That's choice number one. This week, we're going to choice number two. The first choice, says there, is an intellectual choice. It's something that you have to come to the realization in your mind. It happens in your mind to go, oh, I understand. I get it. I can't change myself. I will do wrong things. I can't manage my life. I need God. The second choice follows right on from that. But the second choice, after that first decision, your mind, in your mind of true reality, you get hit with that reality. The second choice is an emotional choice. When we get a revelation of who we actually are and what we're actually like and who God is and what He's actually like, it becomes emotional. It actually touches our very soul, our very spirit, our emotions. Now, just again, perspective. Mournfulness. Now, there is an accurate or an inaccurate perspective on mournfulness. And doing some research here, I found some sermons that did a nice explanation of what mournfulness and being sad is not. So mournfulness, as a Christian, is not being perpetually morose. It's not being downtrodden or downhearted. I like the next one. Doesn't mean you have to be boring. Depressing Christians that trip over their faces. There was one of the stories I read actually said this little girl walking along sees the face of a horse and says, "Mommy, is that horse just looks like a Christian with all the long face on?" It's not being full of self-pity. It's not weeping continually. And, sorry, I'm an elementary school teacher. It's not being. "Good morning, Pooh Bear," said Eeyore gloomily. "If it is a good morning," he said, "which I doubt," said he. "Why, what's the matter?" "Nothing, Pooh Bear, nothing. We can't all, and some of us don't. That's all there is to it." "Can't all what?" said Pooh, rubbing his nose. "Gaiety, song and dance, here we go on the mulberry bush." There's a quote by somebody I've never heard of before, Flora Slosson Woolner. I think she's from Northern Ireland. But she really got a handle on it. And she says, "It is not enough for us within the arena of the world's pain merely to know of a God who sympathizes. It is not even enough to know of a God who heals. We need to know of and be connected with a God who experiences with us, for us, each grief, each wound. We need to be bonded with the God who has had nails in the hands and a spear in the heart." So mourning is about being sad. It is. But thinking again back to last week, it is to be sad about our past mistakes. And this is one that I, given the chance, I can go here and I can make the mistake of staying here, mourning for the past mistakes. But when you get the revelation of who you are and you realize some of your past mistakes, you actually have a realization that, "Oh, I hurt somebody when I said that. Oh, when I did that, oh, they must have been really badly hurt." And so we can actually mourn that perspective of who we are. And we can mourn the fact that we don't match up to God's standard. We can mourn our loss of control. You know, I really like being in control. And there are times when God doesn't let me be in control. And when I realize that I'm trying to do it on my own, it can bring me to that state of mourning. And it can get me to cry out to God. I think back to when my son was knee-high to a grasshopper. And he had a fever of 100 and something awfully high. I'm not sure what it was. And we took him to the doctor and we gave him Motrin, and it just wouldn't break. And it's painful because there was nothing I could do. It was out of my control. But it did bring me to tears before God. It brought me before God saying, I can't do it. The doctor can't do it. We need you. Praise God. He brought comfort and relief. And the fever did this. He's still alive. He's right there. Yeah. So it's good. When we get a revelation of mourning, it can also actually allow us to mourn over the sins of others. If you're like me, it's much easier to just get offended with the sins of others. Oh, I can't believe they said that. But again, if somebody says something offensive to you, is that any difference to what you are to others? I know I'm not perfect. And unfortunately, neither is anybody else. So we can get to that state of mourning by seeing, okay, you know what? Oh, when they behave like that, boy, that grieves God. And oh, look at the pain it causes to other people. And that can grieve us. And we can actually go to God with that grief. And it's also, we can grieve over the state of our sinful world. I mean, possibly the ultimate form of grief in that area is when somebody we love dies. Death is the result of sin in this world. And it's easy to see that, but I looked over and saw Hannah Davies here this morning. Hi, Hannah. And she has a revelation of grieving for the sinful state of the world. She will sometimes hear about somebody else out there who got into an accident. And it really, really gets her. And she wants to pray for them. That's just sweet. If only I could have more of that. Now, there is a danger that we can get stuck in our mourning. We can just go, okay, oh, it's so bad. And we'd become Eeyore. It's all so bad. But we can't remain there. We need to see that grief, that sadness, that mourning as a pathway to the comfort of God. Grief is God's pathway to comfort. And Isaiah 61 is one of the passages. The year of the Lord's favor. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God. To comfort all who mourn. And provide for those who grieve in Zion. To bestow on them the crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of spirit of despair. So when we go to God with our mourning, we get the oil of joy, we get the garment of praise, we get a crown of beauty. Now, in an ideal world, it's very simple. Revelation, I'm a sinner. I blow it, I always will. Next step, oh man, I'm a sinner. And we go to God, we grieve, and he helps us. There's a slight problem, because if you're like me, you get into this times where you want to just deny it. No, really, it's okay. It's okay. And denial is just simply refusing God's power to help. We may realize our state and the fact that we are powerless to control our tendencies, but that doesn't mean we have made the decision to go to God for help. You see, if we could just handle the problem on our own, we likely would. And if you're like me, the times you most go to God is when there's a problem. It's so easy when everything's just going great. Oh, it's so easy just to kind of forget about God. Things are great. I don't need God. We'll get back to that one later, actually. Things are great. I don't need God. But anytime we experience any kind of pain, physical, emotional, financial, relational. It is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to change. It's an opportunity to change our perspective. I got a really itchy nose. I'm very sorry about that. When I was living in Winnipeg, I was the principal of a Christian school there for a while, and I went to this in-service, and there were about 50, 60 principals all sitting in this big room, and there was somebody, I can't remember everything they were trying to walk us through, but they walked us through this one exercise, and they said, okay, kid, everybody, could you please turn to the person you're sitting beside and study them. Study them. See what they're wearing. See what they look like. And try to understand who they are. Okay, finish that. You've got 2 minutes to do that. Good. Now, turn your back to that person. Now, change 5 things about your appearance. You know? There's one, you know. If you had longer hair, you could do something to your hair. It's hard for me to do that, you know. Tuck the sweater. Did 5 different things. What many people did that had watches is they switched the watch from one wrist to the other. So he did this, and we had to try to identify what the 5 things were, which is great. But then, like 2 hours later, he comes back and he says, how many of you changed the watch from one wrist to the other? And I think everybody who was wearing a watch put up their hand, yes. And that was probably half, two-thirds of the people there. And then he said, okay, tell me, when you switched the watch from one hand to the other, how did it feel? Got everything, weird, uncomfortable, wrong, just all these things. Well, you get used to wearing a watch on one wrist, whichever one it is, right? And he made the great observation. He says, change is uncomfortable. And even if a change is a good thing, it's still uncomfortable. So we might not just jump at change from God, because that means I have to change. That might not be comfortable to me. C.S. Lewis put it like this. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pain. So when there's pain in your life, think, okay, God, what are you trying to say? Pain is God's antidote for denial. Pain is like the fire alarm. If the fire alarm went off in here right now, I hope we'd all get up and peaceful, orderly way walk out of the building. Somebody would figure out if there was a fire, and then we could sort things out. We wouldn't just sit here. Come on, Derek, finish your sermon. The fire alarm's going. Come on, hurry up. Want to get out of here? Want to go have lunch? Oh, better save lunch for the fire. Yeah. No, we get out of the building. So if there's pain in your life, don't live in denial. And pain can come in many forms. I know for my family, for the past 2 years, we've been trying to move. And there have been some people who have been praying for us on a daily basis. And we're to the point where we desperately need to move. And we tried selling our condo, and we tried doing this. It is getting painfully difficult to live in this little condo. There have been many, many times when I go, okay, I've got it figured out. I know what I can do because I've found a solution. God goes, nope. Okay, this time I've found the solution. Nope. You have to get into my head. It's not about me finding a solution. It's about me finding him. It was painful. But he got my attention. And I hope and believe he's got my surrender. We have to go to God. Don't deny it and find ways to cope. There, in this book, it reveals 3 denial busters that God uses. And I think all of us could identify with some of these somewhere. Crisis in life. In Winnipeg, there was a time that I got to the point I went on stress leave. I was unable to cope with life. I couldn't cope with the simplest little tasks in my home. God got my attention. When I was 16 years old, the doctor told me I had diabetes. God got my attention. Accidents. Actually, that's a little more later. But another one is confrontation. You can get caught up short if somebody comes up to confront you. It's when people you know who love you speak into your life. So, like, after this, if Austin were to come up to me and said, you know, when you did this or that, it really, really was offensive, I'd receive it because I know Austin well enough to know he wouldn't be just picking on me just to bring me down a notch. He's not like that. Dawson Trotman, I don't know if any of you know Dawson Trotman. He was the one who founded the Navigators. A great organization that brought me back to the Lord when I was trying to run away from God. He takes it even a step further. And he says, even if it's somebody that doesn't really love you at all, and they come pointing their finger at you going, look what you did, look what you did. He describes it, he says, what you got to do? Somebody's really upset like that. You kind of like a bullfighter. And you let them charge right past you, say everything they need to say, and then you step back, and you find any grain of truth that you can find, and you hold on to it, and you receive it, and you just hope that God will use it to change you. Let God change you. So God can actually even use people who might not actually want the best for you or love you, because he loves you. Third denial buster, catastrophe. And sometimes the bottom does fall out of life. And I mean, there can be major catastrophes like the earthquakes we've seen recently, but sometimes just personal catastrophes. And it's kind of like God says, so you want to try to play God? Hey, go ahead. Try it. Little thing like that, you know. Trying to get the money together with the sale of our condo, which we have sold, you know, trying to find out, okay, now what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I'm all just too excited and too frustrated and too everything, and I'm driving along, and I back my van up right into something, and I break the back window of my van. God, I needed that money. He says, yeah, but you need me more. Don't turn your back on me through this process. But you know what? There is help, and that's what choice number two is about, getting help. So this is the good news. Earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to him, and that he has the power to help me recover. It comes down to what we believe. Genesis chapter 3, Charlie looked at that last week. Satan tempted Adam and Eve. I want to just highlight, how did he tempt them? To be like God. But where is the battleground? Anybody that used to be one of my students can tell me, where is the battleground? Anybody, you remember? No? My student sister can tell me. It's in the mind. He said, you can be like God and know. You can know. So what we believe, it comes down so much to what we believe. We must believe that God exists. That's the perspective we must have. We must first believe he exists if we expect him to help us. Hebrews 11, verse 6, and without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Romans 1, 20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Most people would acknowledge God exists. Okay, this is the part I'm going to have some fun here. If we believe God exists, what do we really think he's like? Remember, it's about perspective. Do we have an accurate perspective of God? Some people think God is a stern judge, ready to hand down punishment. He's legalistic. Follows all of the rules. There's no grace. He's just to meter out punishment. Some people believe God is a mean policeman, just looking out. Oh, I saw you do that. Sorry, Ryan. And you know what? It's even perspective on real policemen is not always very good. You know, you're driving along. Oh, I better slow down. There's a cop. The police are actually here to help us, and they're really good. Ever see Phil Weeb? He's a good guy. And the police are here to help us, as is God. It's not just looking to get us in trouble. Here's a fun one. Santa. I want to go to God just because, you know, I need this, and I need this, I need this. God, please give me this, give me this, give me this. It's a gimme, 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 gimme list. It's wonderful. God is great. And, of course, the famous nice old man with a gray beard. Good for listening. Slow to act. If he acts. Hopefully he's not senile. You know? Then again, God could be Superman. Yes. If there is a need, he'll be there. But, you know, Superman's pretty busy, and he only wants to deal with the big stuff. You know, that's something in the community I grew up, Mennonite community I grew up, then that's something I heard at different times. Well, I'm going to pray about that. Oh, you don't. I don't really pray about that. God's got bigger things on his mind than that. You know. I don't like that perspective. I do believe God is powerful, but he has time as well. And in today's society, often we get a picture of God based on our own father. I actually get scared about that, actually, because I think, what do my kids think of me? Because I know that that's one of the areas that I like to have control is in my family. And are they going to get this image of God being a controlling God? I hope not. Hopefully I can remember to go and say, you know what, I was wrong when I did that. But there are a lot of kids, and I was taught this by an evangelist in Winnipeg when I worked with him one summer. There are a lot of people, not kids, but people today that have a very hard time accepting God simply because of who their father was. There are a lot of dads out there, and you can even look on TV for some examples of how men and fathers can be portrayed today. But the actual truth is that God is so much more and so much better than any picture or idea that we may come up with. We have to make sure we have the right perspective. I'm going to go through several different scriptures. The references will be up there, but I'm going to read them to you just to help you get the right perspective. First part is you have to know that God knows your situation. All of our situations are different, but God knows your situation, knows every single part of it. He sees the good, he sees the bad, he sees everything in between. He knows it all. Psalm 139. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar, you discern my going out and my lying down, you are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind before and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? Psalm 31, verse 7. This is taken from the New Living Translation. I will be glad and rejoice in your unfailing love, for you have seen my troubles and you care about the anguish of my soul. God sees your troubles, whatever they are, and he actually cares about the anguish of your soul. Matthew 6, verse 8. For your Father knows what you need before you ask him. That's amazing. Psalm 34, 18. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. God not only knows us, but he actually cares about our situation. Psalm 103, verses 13 and 14. As a father has compassion on his children, So the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. Jeremiah 31, verse 3. The Lord appeared to us in the past, saying, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with unfailing kindness. In Romans 5, 8. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So God knows us. He knows our situation. But here's a big one. He has the power to change you and your situation. It's kind of, this is a good part of Superman. Not only, but he can do it. But he cares about every little aspect of it, and he has time for it. Ephesians 1, 18 to 20. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms. Luke 18:27. Jesus replied, what is impossible with man is possible with God. This is all very much just about perspective. Last week, getting that perspective that we don't cut it, but God does. This week, it's actually getting that emotional perspective of who we really are compared to who really God is. And are we good? I don't know if any of you noticed this morning, but we're worshiping. And in the midst of worship, Mary is here, and she can't sing. She's got to the point of tears. And I looked and I thought, that's beautiful. I have to say, that's beautiful. I think I have an illustration for my message. So Mary, could you come and share what was God doing?
We were singing Before the Throne of God Above, and I really like this song. The words really are so good. And the part that kind of got me was in the second verse, when Satan tempts me to despair and tells me of the guilt within. And just, I often kind of see God as the judge and like, prodding me behind or something. It's really silly. It's Satan's trick and it gets me. And I beat myself up a lot. And it's only because of when I look at Jesus that I can smile and know that I'm free from that. So yeah, the words that went on and made me so happy that I just wanted to cry and keep on crying for a really long time. We're just right after, just realizing that he's done that for me.
And praise God, he doesn't leave you there crying. He actually meets you there and turns the sadness into joy, into dancing. So how do we do it? Plug into God's power. Three things we need to be healthy and whole. Taken from 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. And this book refers to this verse and uses the, I think today's English version, which I couldn't actually find on the internet. So I have down here the contemporary English version, but the NIV has the last word slightly differently. But the contemporary English version says, God's Spirit doesn't make cowards of us all. The Spirit gives us power, love, and self-control. And there's that song, God is not given us a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power, of love, and soundness of mind. Self-control, soundness of mind. We have to realize we just can't do it on our own. We need God's power. He is the higher power, the only higher power. We all want love. Love. We want to be loved, and we want to love. And we need to let go of the fear of being hurt by others. And we need to let people love us. Self-control. The only way to get self-control is to let Jesus and His Holy Spirit have control of us. Self-control only comes through God's control. So choice number two is about getting help. Earnestly believe that God exists. Get the right perspective of who God is. And part of that is, I matter to Him. Remember that you matter to God, and that God has the power to help you recover. God can actually change you. He can change your situation. And Charlie said last week, so I'll say this week, take it as homework. You know, God is wanting His best for you. And to let Him do that, it takes some perspective change. It's that 3D picture. You know, you try to get that 3D picture, and hopefully you can see it. But part of it is to take that time to pray about it. Say, God, what are you wanting to highlight in my life? Surrender all of that to God. Write about it. And actually, if you wrote anything out of last week's sermon or last week's network group, go back. What did you write last week? How does this week fit in? And share it. And I think Charlie gave some ideas of who you might be able to share it with. You know, you may have a personal pastor, a network group. So share it with somebody. It really does help it become meaningful. But why don't we just bow our heads in prayer? Heavenly Father, Your kingdom is such an upside-down kingdom. And this verse that says, happy are those who are sad, does not really make sense until we begin to really wrestle with it. So Lord, I just ask that You would help us to wrestle with it. And I pray You would help us to get a great realization, a great revelation of who You are. Lord, if we have misconceptions of what You're like, Lord, I pray You would open up Your word to us. Use Your spirit, Lord, to open up Your word and give us a revelation of what You are really like. Lord, and I pray You'd also give us that revelation again of what we are really like. And Lord, I pray You'd help me and help us to really come to grips with that. And in a good and true way, when we realize who we are, to give it to You so that You can change that mourning into dancing. Because Jesus, we can't do this on our own. And Lord, I know I even need Your help in realizing who I am, let alone who You are. So Lord, would You help me and help us all? And I just pray, Lord, that You would take us these weeks just to a really great journey, so much closer to You. For Your glory and for our good. Amen.